Chapter 24. Many people go to the tavern to forget their troubles. Lydda's Pipe was a tavern where troubles went to be forgotten. The common room had plenty of hidden nooks and crannies, poor lighting, and a clientele that largely kept to themselves, at least until the heat died down. It was a good place to find people who had secrets they were willing to part with, for a modest price. At least it usually was. "It's a seller's market," Gorm grumbled, slumping onto the bench next to Laruna. "Barely anybody here, and everyone's looking for information."
"Well, some are also interested in procuring services," said the Solomancer. "I've had two people offer me gold to do assassin work."
"Better than the proposition I got," said Caitha, nodding to a table set in a dark alcove in the wall. "That'd explain the crashing a while back, then." Gorm peered back at the nook and the wreckage contained therein. "Did you have to break two chairs?"
"I told the server he'd pay for the damages," Caitha shrugged, "when he's conscious again."
"I'd say that's more of an if than a when." Jin winced at the mess.
"Anyway, we're no closer to finding either Heraldin or Geist," said Laruna.
"Or Thane," added Caitha.
"Aye." Gorm turned back to his ale. "We need to—" "Oh!" A small folded slip of paper sat in front of him, leaning conspicuously against his tankard. Laruna cast him a sidelong glance as she took a long pull from her tankard of ale.
"Where'd that come from?"
"That's what I'd like to know." Gorm opened the paper and found a message stamped out in the blocky lettering that one might expect from a gnomish printing press. All the letters were slightly askew, as though the words had been vigorously shaken. "You have been asking for Heraldin Strummins. We can help each other. Meet in the alley behind Lydda's Pipe. Come alone."
"What is it?" asked Caitha.
"A sign from the gods," said Gorm, standing. "They've decided to start being useful." "Is it one of those pamphlets from the Temple of Oppo?" asked Jin. "Honestly, I never understood why they do that." "It's a tip about the bard," said Gorm. "I'm to check it out in the back alley. If I'm not back in 10 minutes, you know what to do."
"Drink your ale," said Laruna.
"And order me a cold one." Gorm headed for the back door.
The alley behind Lydda's was dark, lit only by the last of the twilight leaking through the crowded rooftops of Dark Ridge, the cluster of slums and derelict factories on the ridgemost end of the second tier. Stacks of crates and piles of rags littered the alley, casting strange shadows across the broken cobbles.
"Gorm Ingerson!"
buzzed a strange voice from the darkness. He turned. In the deepest shadows of the alley, a strange figure slumped against a stack of boxes. He wore a long coat with sleeves that totally covered his hands. A scarf and a wide-brimmed hat obscured the man's face. Gorm could only determine it was a man at all from the mismatched tufts of hair sticking out from the scarf at odd angles.
"Aye," said Gorm. "This your note?"
"Heraldin Strummins is in danger."
The figure's voice sounded like the chorus of rats, or perhaps like the wings of a swarm of insects.
"Can't say I'm too surprised," Gorm muttered. "Well, how bad is it this time?"
The figure rustled like leaves in the wind, and Gorm heard tiny squeaking sounds at the edge of his hearing.
"Benny Hookhand has taken him."
"That's pretty thrice cursed bad," swore Gorm.
"We know where he's being held," said the figure. "You need to go tonight."
"If we're not already too late," agreed Gorm. "But I'll wager there's a price for this information."
"Save Poldo!"
exclaimed the figure, its voice high and warping with sudden enthusiasm.
"Save what now?"
The figure trembled and chittered again.
"Twin Poldo is being held along with Mr. Strummins. You will set him free as well."
"Enemy of my enemy is my friend, eh?" Gorm scratched at his beard. "And how do I know this ain't some sort of elaborate trap?"
The figure squeaked and chittered to itself. Its belly warped and wiggled for a moment, and then a bulge emerged between the buttons of its heavy coat. The mass unfurled itself as it flopped out onto the cobbles in front of Gorm. The dwarf picked up the brightly colored hat.
"Don't know many who'd wear a hat like this," said Gorm. "All right, we'll think on it."
"Yes, go soon."
The figure leaned forward precariously, its arms swinging as though on pendulums. A slip of paper slid out of the end of one of its sleeves and fluttered down on the cobbles.
"Here."
Gorm picked it up and read.
"This address is in the River Downs," said Gorm.
When there was no response, he looked up. The odd figure had already shambled back into the shadows.
"Strangest thing was he left all his clothes behind in a big heap," Gorm later said, as he recounted the meeting to the party.
"It could be a trap," said Jin. "That hat has clearly been recently purchased, and anyone who knows the bard will be familiar with his sense of fashion."
"Or lack thereof," said Laruna.
"Could be a trap," conceded Gorm. "Then again, anyone who wanted to get us somewhere could find better bait than a fight with Benny Hookhand."
"True enough," said Caitha. "Honestly, even if it's a real tip, we need to think twice about—"
The ranger was interrupted by the sharp thunk of a dagger embedding itself in the table beside her. A neatly folded piece of paper was pinned down by the blade.
"What is it?"
Gorm asked as Caitha read the note. Caitha smirked as she read aloud.
"You have been asking around after Heraldin Strummons. I can show you to him. Meet me in the back alley."
"Intrigue begets intrigue," said Jin, passing a scrap of food to Patches under the table.
"Intrigue's starting to beget nausea at this point."
Gorm tossed a few gilton on the table and stood again.
"Come on, let's go see what this is about."
The alley was slightly darker, but otherwise unchanged when Gorm led the other heroes through Lydda's back door. There was even another man in a long coat and wide-brimmed hat lurking in the shadows.
"Are you Gorm Ingerson?"
he asked in a gravelly voice.
"You know I am. What's this all about?"
Gorm peered into the darkness. There was a familiar quality in the timbre of the informant's voice. The mysterious figure held up a gloved hand.
"I can tell you where Heraldin Strummons is."
"We already know where he is," said Laruna.
Wait, what?"
The informant stumbled over his words.
"We know where the bard is," said Gorm, "so your information ain't worth much to us."
"Well, that's a little hurtful." The indignant informant lost the gravel in his voice, and the other heroes recognized it at once.
"Wait, Heraldin?" said Gorm.
"Of course it's me," grumbled the bard, throwing off the long coat as he stepped out of the shadows. "But you already knew that, didn't you? Not that you wouldn't take the chance to ruin the moment."
"So you were following us the whole time?" asked Jin.
"Once I found out you were looking for me, I searched for all of you, yes," said the bard, "and I spent half the day planning this reunion. The surprise reveal, the heartfelt apology, the long embraces—"
"Don't push your luck," warned Caitha.
"The respectful handshakes—" Heraldin didn't skip a beat.
"But in typical fashion, you brushed it all off and ruined the moment. Not worth much indeed."
"Sorry, we were misinformed," said Jin.
"We got a tip that you were taken by Benny Hookhand,"
said Gorm, holding out the hat given to him by the previous informant.
"What?"
The bard snatched the hat out of Gorm's hand, his resentment forgotten.
"Aye, must have been a trap. They said you was taken to an address in the Riverdones. We have to get to Benny's lair,"
said Heraldin, taking off his ratty old hat and replacing it with the newer, less damaged one.
"There's no time to waste." "But why pick a fight with Andoran's most dangerous gangster?"
asked Gorm.
"Benny Hookhand obviously didn't get you."
"Exactly," hissed Heraldin, "but he likely thinks he did."
"Don't talk as much as you used to, do you, Heraldin?"
asked Mr. Plank, prodding at the prisoner with the tip of a wooden club. The bard leveled a burning glare, but said nothing. This was an unsurprising response. The thin man hadn't said a word since Poldo had met him. For the most part, the human just sat up straight on the prisoner's bench, staring at the walls of the rickety dockhouse they were held in. Something in Heraldin's eyes must have unsettled the goon. Poldo winced and leaned away as Mr. Plank gave the captive a couple of solid whacks to the shoulder with his club.
"Don't you look at me like that,"
barked their captor. The bard didn't so much as flinch, let alone cry out. He stared at the goon a moment longer, and then turned away with a slight shrug. Unnerved, Mr. Plank turned his attentions back to Lemba, who by contrast hadn't stopped talking since Poldo met her.
"Oh God, this is bad. I knew I shouldn't have done business with the Hookhand's goons,"
the Tinderkin muttered to herself, rocking back and forth on her stool.
"I mean, yeah, I cut the potions a bit. Maybe they make you a little sick, yeah, but what did they expect at those prices? People need low-cost potions. I was just meeting market demand is all."
"Shut it!"
The floor of the old dockhouse creaked and cracked as Mr. Plank stalked across the small room they occupied.
"I told you to be quiet!"
Lemba fell silent, but only for as long as the goon loomed over her. As soon as he stepped away, she resumed her vacant litany of regrets and excuses. Poldo was actually glad for the Tinderkin's muttering. Her murmurs and those of the river bubbling along beneath the floor masked the conversation he was having.
"Did the paperwork for the trust make it to the lawyers?"
he whispered softly. The wood gnome hiding in his collar chirruped once. "Yes."
"Excellent."
Poldo allowed himself a small smile of relief. Benny Hookhand had kept them waiting for the entire day, but that provided Poldo and his diminutive staff time to make arrangements.
"And is the real estate agent set to come yet?"
Two chirrups. "No."
"Send another missive, then. It has to be tomorrow,"
Poldo said.
"If these heroes you've arranged for show up and rescue me, the home won't be safe for the residents. We need to find a new location within the week."
Two chirrups.
"I know it's unreasonable, but..."
A scream rang out from beyond the ominous red door at the back of the room, followed by a final-sounding splash. A moment later, the red door opened, and Mr. Knucker stepped into the room, followed, improbably enough, by an even larger goon.
"Mr. Hookhand is ready to see you now, Lemba."
The Tinderkin protested and pleaded, but Mr. Knucker took her by the arm and led her back into the recesses of Benny Hookhand's lair. The red door slammed behind them with an air of finality.
"Stepping out for a smoke,"
the massive goon told Mr. Plank, pulling a silver cigar case from the inner pocket of his jacket. Poldo waited for the goon to make his way across the small antechamber and step out the front door before resuming his conversation with the wood gnome perched on his shoulder.
"Look, I appreciate the difficulty involved, but consider the consequences of failure,"
he exhorted.
"Mrs. Herc's home for the underprivileged must open as soon as possible. The only way to protect the guests is to make it seem as if they never stayed with me."
The wood gnome reluctantly conceded a single chirrup.
"Good," Poldo said. "I know you can make it happen. And give my regards to Mrs. Herc and the pups."
He felt a tickle down his spine as the gnome clambered down the back of his shirt, and then the tiny employee was away, leaving Poldo alone with his thoughts. They were by and large unpleasant, but much less so than the scream that interrupted them a few minutes later.
"That was quick,"
said Mr. Plank, as Mr. Knucker stepped through the red door.
"The Hookhand was eager to get to these two."
The senior goon leered at the prisoners.
"He likes to save the fun ones for last."
"So which one does he want first?"
asked Mr. Plank.
"Mr. Strumman's here, of course."
Mr. Knucker prodded at the bard, who stood and walked solemnly through the red door.
"Gods, you know how much money that little scribkin cost, Benny? He's going to want to take his time on that one."
He shot Poldo a menacing grin before the red door slammed behind him.
"Too bad for you,"
Mr. Plank laughed at Poldo. The scribkin felt the sweat beating on his brow, blurring his vision. Nausea settled in the pit of his stomach. He put his head down by his knees and breathed deeply until he heard a sound like someone choking, or screaming, or choking while screaming. Poldo lifted his head.
"Is that..."
The front door ripped from its hinges as the massive goon crashed through it. A cigar dangled from his lips and two arrows protruded from his throat, constricting his death rattle to a struggling whine. Poldo recoiled as the dying man crashed to the floor at his feet.
"What the..."
Mr. Plank began, but he never finished. A whirling ball of fury and beard launched through the hole in the wall where the front door used to be and slammed into Mr. Plank with horrifying ferocity. Poldo looked away and squeezed his eyes shut, though he didn't cover his ears in time to block out the sickening sounds of a live dissection via axe. Something splattered on his shoes. The carnage only lasted a few seconds. A gruff voice rang out,
"Ye Dwin Poldo?"
Poldo opened one eye. A dwarf-shaped demon loomed over him, speckled with the mortal remains of Mr. Plank. He stared down at the scribkin with burning, intense eyes.
"I said, are ye Dwin Poldo?"
the dwarf repeated. Shock threatened to overwhelm Poldo, and his terror precluded forming coherent sentences. His brain fell back to the businessman's most basic instinct. With a subconscious spasm of his arm, he pulled a business card from his coat pocket and extended it to the dwarf. Other armed heroes were running into the room as the dwarf took the card and looked at it.
"Is this the secondary?" asked a tall elven woman.
"Aye," said the dwarf, reading the card.
"Well, Mr. Poldo, you're free to go wherever you please."
"Though I'd suggest you be somewhere else for a while," said a man in the gray robes of an omnomancer.
As shocking as it was to see a brazen gray mage, it wasn't nearly as surprising as the man who bounded in on the wizard's heels.
"But where is Geist?" asked the spitting image of Heraldin. The bard, someone who looks like me." Poldo pointed mutely to the red door.
"Then there's not a moment to lose!" shouted the new Heraldin.
"Aye,"
said the dwarf, hefting his axe. After a couple of swings, the red door exploded in a cloud of crimson shrapnel. The adventurers streamed through the antechambers, leaping over the various bits of Mr. Plank as they rushed into Benny Hookhand's inner sanctum. Poldo stared after them, violently shaking, until a chorus of chirps and tweets brought him back to his senses. He turned to a crowd of wood gnomes at the front door, jumping and pointing emphatically.
"Oh, yes, yes, we must make our escape,"
said Poldo, hopping off the bench and trying not to think of whatever had just squelched beneath his foot.
"A lot of guts,"
the woman snarled at Gorm. She stood near the far corner of the back room of the dockhouse, surrounded by a phalanx of over-muscled men in dark suits. Heraldin's double was held in place next to an open trap door, and beneath him the Terrapin River rushed and bubbled with quiet menace.
"It takes a lot of guts to break into one of my dens,"
the woman spoke in a low growl as she brandished an ornate sailor's hook at the adventurers. A lithe figure in dark leather armor, she had raven hair pulled into a single ponytail and a Dalish face marked by a myriad of long, thin scars crisscrossing each other from every angle.
"Who do you think you are?"
Heraldin stepped around Gorm before the dwarf could offer an answer.
"Hello, Benny," said the bard.
"Heraldin Strummins,"
exclaimed Benny Hookhand. The woman turned back to the figure held in place by her goons.
"But then who—"
"That glorious bastard is an imposter," Heraldin smiled and nodded to his double. "A fool who thought he could clear my name by dying in my stead." The doppelganger, for its part, stared at Heraldin in bewildered shock.
"Or you might be the fake,"
snarled Benny.
"Perhaps, but when have I ever been that quiet before?" asked Heraldin.
Benny thought for a moment, then shoved the doppelganger away from the trap door with a curse.
"Wait," Gorm interjected. "Benny Hookhand is a woman?"
"You always said he was a man," said Laruna.
There was a chorus of low groans, snorts, and general derision from the assembled goons. Even Heraldin turned back to the party with a look of incredulous scorn.
"What are you talking about?" hissed the bard.
"You mean this old thing?"
laughed Benny, strutting closer. The woman brought the point of the hook to within a finger's length of her eyeball.
"I couldn't care less about this meat bag."
Gorm felt his stomach turn as she stepped into the light. Though the woman's mouth was smiling, her eyes were wide with terror.
"Benny's the hook," he said.
"Obviously,"
sneered Benny Hookhand.
"The name is quite clear," agreed Heraldin.
Gorm never knew what possessed ancient wizards to make them create sentient weapons, but once they did so, much of the possessing was done by the weapons rather than the wizards. A sword or an axe that thought for itself was bad enough, but nothing was worse than a blade that thought for its wielder. The woman that Benny is currently, attached to was once an assassin sent to dispatch him, said Heraldin.
"Well, I wouldn't say I'm attached to her."
The hook withdrew from her eye, only to drag itself down the right side of her cheek, carving a thin crimson line amid the innumerable scars on her face.
"Not like when I was with you."
"Wait, what?" exclaimed Katha.
"Oh, yeah," said Benny. "Heraldin here was one of the best bone sacks I ever got hooked on. But when this one showed up,"
the hook swung perilously close to the woman's face again,
"Strummins fought back long enough to get himself disarmed."
"And I never looked back," said Heraldin. "Until now."
"Oh," said Benny.
The doppelganger is a friend of mine. No, a brother, said Heraldin, smiling at his double. And there's no way I'll let him throw away his life for the sake of my freedom. He's got too much to live for. The doppelganger stared at Heraldin, confused.
So you planned to, what, storm in here and take him back?
Laughed Benny.
You know how many goons and thugs I've got around this place?
By my count, I'd say 6 less than you did 10 minutes ago, said Gorm.
Benny's vessel narrowed her eyes.
Good to know there's some fight in you, but that doesn't make this any less of a fool's errand. What's to stop me from having Gritty over there slit your friend's throat?
Things could get pretty violent if that happened, growled Laruna.
I still like my odds, said Benny. If everybody dies, it's only a matter of time before someone comes along scavenging for weapons. You fleshies come and go, but I keep sticking around.
But why let it come to that? Interjected Heraldin, stepping forward. Why not make a deal?
A deal?
Said Benny.
What's he doing?
Katha hissed in Gorm's ear.
Improvisin',
Gorm whispered. You're not in on this? Jin looked at the dwarf in alarm. My life for the doppelgangers, Heraldin extended his arms. Or, more accurately, my body.
What?
Gorm and his party chorused in disbelief. The doppelganger lurched forward against the goon's grasp, as if to yell out in protest.
Your friends don't seem to like the idea,
laughed Benny Hookhand.
Besides, I had an agreement with you before, and look how that turned out for me.
This would be different, said Heraldin. There's no contract this time, and that means no escape clause. Even if I could get disarmed again, you could just have your goons make me pick you back up. Benny shook his vessel's head.
No, I don't make deals. There's always a catch. You're planning something.
What could I be planning? The bard unbuckled his belt, letting his rapier and supply pouches drop to the floor. Benny, you said yourself that this whole building could burn and you'd come out on top. I have no other chance to save a friend.
So you say, but I wouldn't be stuck in this 2-bit body if you weren't such a conniving snake.
Benny gestured at his host body with a derisive scowl. I've no weapons, no more tools, and my hands are empty. The bard displayed his bare palms with an elaborate flourish, ending with his arms straight up above his head like a prisoner's. You've got the upper hand, Benny, and I'm offering you what we both know you really want. Benny Hookhand thoughtfully scratched at his host's chin, carving another bloody line down it.
You always were my favorite flesh puppet, but you're still not the sort to be trusted.
Heraldin glanced at his doppelganger. Sometimes you have to trust people who don't really deserve it. Heraldin's double stared at the bard with an inscrutable expression on his face, but he stopped fighting the goon behind him.
All right, said Benny. We'll give it a shot. You wield me again, and I let your doppelganger go. But keep those hands up in the air, or my boys there are going to start slitting throats.
Of course. Heraldin stepped forward, holding his hands above his head.
Shouldn't we stop him?
Laruna whispered.
We do, and they'll kill Geist for sure, murmured Gorm. And Heraldin won't fare much better, given that the fool left his blade behind.
The former assassin holding Benny Hookhand was extending the enchanted weapon to Heraldin now. Its handle was a T-grip formed from great spikes of iron woven together.
You better not try anything funny,
said Benny. There's nothing left to try, said Heraldin. He looked at the other adventurers with a final smile for the doppelganger. Goodbye, my fellows. With that, he grabbed the handle of the hook. Immediately, the Dalish assassin dropped to the floor as though cut down from a hangman's noose. She gave a choking sob as she scrambled away, but it was overshadowed by the hideous, warped laughter rumbling up from the bard's throat.
Finally! Shouted Benny Hookhand with Heraldin's mouth. Finally! A little closer to my old self!
So you'll honor the deal, then, said Gorm.
Benny Hookhand craned his neck and shook out his legs.
Give me a second here. It takes a moment to, get used to a new body, you know. But yeah, the doppelganger's fine to go.
The goons gave Heraldin's impersonator a forceful shove, sending the doppelganger crashing into a pile of crates and crab traps.
As for the rest of you, well, you weren't really part of the bargain,
laughed Benny.
And now the cavalry has arrived.
Gorm turned to see a long line of well-armored men and women creeping into the room behind him, brandishing an assortment of wicked-looking weapons. Unlike the goons that Gorm and company had already dispatched, these licensed thugs had the right experience and certifications to combat professional heroes.
"Bones,"
swore the dwarf.
"Yeah, we'll get to those eventually,"
said Benny, stretching Haraldin's legs.
"But we're going to start with your skin, fingernails, that sort of thing. It's going to be slow and... Eh?"
The crime lord stopped and looked at his left hand with a confused scowl. He was holding a small slip of paper.
"Thought his hands were empty,"
Benny Hookhand said, flipping the paper over. The blast from the anti-magic rune sent ripples across reality with a low thrum. The flames around Laruna's fists winked out. Jin staggered back, clutching the glove that covered his left hand. Magical weapons wielded by the encroaching thugs flickered and went inert, and Haraldin began to laugh again, though now in his own voice.
"It's called sleight of hand, you worthless hunk of sharpened scrap," the bard hollered.
Before any of the nearby goons could stop him, he hurled the enchanted hook through the trap door in the floor. Gritty dove to catch the flying weapon, but he was too late. Benny Hookhand disappeared beneath the burbling Terrapin River with an unceremonious plunk.
"Ha! Right on you, lad!" shouted Gorm.
"Oh, you're going to regret that,"
snarled Gritty, climbing to his knees. "I don't believe so, my friend," said Haraldin with a confident smirk. "You see, this is the signal."
"What are you?"
The goon froze mid-sentence, cut off by a series of ominous tearing sounds. All eyes turned to the pile of crab traps and fishing gear, where a dark figure was rising like some ancient horror from the grave. He had the ebony skin of an imperial, and much of it was visible as his muscles had recently burst through the tattered bard's costume hanging from his chiseled frame. In one hand he held a broken oar, and with the other, Gaist wrapped a torn piece of red fabric around his face in place of a red scarf.
"Oh, Spug!"
Gritty's swear wasn't an inspired choice for last words, but the goon didn't have long to regret them before he was stabbed in the throat with an oar handle and flipped through a window into the rushing river, the oar still protruding from his throat. Many within the Heroes Guild consider the term weapons master to be something of a misnomer. While all agree that anyone worthy of the title must show considerable mastery of a wide arsenal of bladed and blunt implements of death, the defining characteristic of the profession is that its members do not need an actual weapon to kill. Anything is deadly in the hands of a weapons master. Gaist charged into the nearest pack of surprised goons with a length of knotted rope in one hand and a small anchor in the other, and put both to work with gruesome effectiveness.
"I didn't know that could be done with a rope," said Gorm.
"Even if it can, I'm pretty sure it shouldn't," said Jin. "We've got bigger problems," shouted Katha, loosing an arrow. It ricocheted off the shield of an advancing thug, a massive woman with dark hide armor and a frost-encrusted mace.
Gorm grinned.
"Aye, but they're the right kind of problems to have," he said.
"How so?" hollered Laruna. Magical flames sputtered back to life in her hands.
"They're the kind with a straightforward solution."
Gorm launched himself at the nearest foe. His target parried deftly with a wicked falchion, but Gorm slammed his shield into the thug's side and put the man off balance. The dwarf's next swing cut into his opponent's side, and the one after that put a definitive end to the thug's career. Gorm barely had time to pull his axe from the twitching body before the next foe was upon him.
"My friends, I don't like to be dramatic," Haraldin danced out of the path of a thug's hammer.
"Could have fooled us,"
shouted Jin, throwing a spell at an approaching pair of bola-wielding thugs.
"Hilarious, I'm sure." The bard bent backward to dodge a goon's iron flail. "You may recall that I dropped my gear, and some assistance would be most appreciated."
A strangled scream rang out amidst the chaos as Gaist put a fishing net to creative and deadly use. The goon's corpse hadn't yet slumped to the floor before the doppelganger was at Haraldin's side. Without irony, he offered the bard a riverman's gaff. Haraldin sneered down at the gaff.
"And what am I supposed to do with that?"
he demanded. By way of demonstration, Geist reached out to snag the face of the flail-wielding thug with the thin hook, snapped the struggling man's neck, and flipped him through the trap door and into the river in one fluid motion.
"Well, we can't all do that," snapped Heraldin.
Geist wore a hint of a smile as he shrugged. He turned back to face the thug with the hammer, just as the man was immolated by an arcing bolt of strange energy.
"What the blazes was that?"
hollered Laruna, hurling a blast of fire at her own opponent, a gnarled woman with one eye and an ensorcelled tower shield.
"Sinusoidal waves of fire and lightning." Jin pursed his lips as he watched the thug stagger for the trap door and hurl himself into the river. Somewhat effective, but I didn't expect the fractal helix pattern.
"Stop your silly experiments and fight!"
The Solomancer dodged back to avoid a quick series of sword thrusts, then countered with another ball of flame. The tower shield deflected it easily.
"I'd say I'm effectively doing both," snapped Jin. He hurled another blended weave at the tower shield, just as the Solomancer loosed her own spell.
Jin's tiny weave bounced off the shield and into Laruna's onrushing mass of flames. Surprisingly enough, the Omnimancer's spell split the fireball as a stone splits a river. Half of Laruna's weave splashed harmlessly against the gnarled thug's tower shield, but the rest skipped up into a tight arc and rained down on the unfortunate woman's head. She was blown through the rickety floor in a torrent of raging flames.
"What did you just do?"
yelled Laruna, staring at the charred hole in the floor. The Omnimancer looked just as surprised.
"I think the helix weaves formed a polarized lattice that—"
"You messed up my spell," said Laruna, more shocked than angry.
"No, I rewove your spell."
Jin sounded much happier about it. "Let's try it again."
"That's going to be difficult," said Katha, loosing an arrow.
It caught a goon in the back, and he fell screaming through a window.
"No, it's quite simple," said Jin. "I think I could rework the lattice to—"
"She means you've run out of targets."
Gorm pulled his axe from the remains of one of the thugs. Jin and Laruna looked around the wreckage of the room, covered in splintered wood and the mortal remains of Benny's henchmen.
"Ah, so we have," sighed the Omnimancer. "But not for long," added Heraldin. "Listen."
Gorm could hear angry shouts in the distance.
"More thugs?"
"Or the bannermen," said Katha. "So either way,
we should get going."
Gorm turned to Geist, who, in the fashion of a true professional, had looted a long black cloak from a fallen thug. With the cape concealing his shredded garments, the weapons master looked almost like his old self again.
"Welcome back," said Gorm. "It's good to see you."
Geist set a huge hand on the dwarf's shoulder, looked him in the eye, and nodded once.
"Oh, don't get all emotional on us now," Heraldin told the weapons master. "Look, there will be plenty of time for talking and or stoically glaring later. For now, we need to get out of here."
"Soon as we collect our fee."
Gorm bent down and grabbed a coin purse off the corpse of a thug. "You want to loot Benny's henchmen now?" asked Heraldin.
"Well, we won't get to do it later,"
said Katha, as she deftly relieved an ex-goon of his earthly possessions.
"And it's been a long while since our last bit of income,"
agreed Laruna, pulling a steaming coin bag from some charred remains.
"Plus, stopping my father will be incredibly difficult," said Jin. "There's bound to be significant expenses."
"Yeah, probably more than you can afford," shouted Bert.
The elf snickered as she walked away, the heels of her shoes clicking on the brick streets of Stonewood Summit.
"Gutter scarg, anyway,"
Bert muttered, running painted claws through a recently dyed coif of fur.
"Hey now,"
said Jenner, a gap-toothed kobold in a garish pink vest. He lit a cigarette.
"No need for that. There's plenty more here." "Yeah, plenty more gutter scargs," grumbled Bert.
Despite its lofty name, Stonewood Summit was firmly set on the ridgeward side of Andoran's sixth tier. The bricks on the streets and in the houses were cheap and crumbling. Most of the street torches were broken or burnt out. Unsavory characters lurked in the few pools of light along the damp road, including the pair of kobolds. Any elf forced to live down here was scraping at the bottom of elven society, the kind of immortal that Bert used to turn his nose up at back when he lived at the embassy. Times had changed.
"Heads up!"
Jenner stamped out his cigarette and nodded at a pair of elven women making their way down the street. Bert was already up and dancing.
"Hey, miss!
Nice purse, miss, he shouted to the pair. That purse looks a little light, yelled Jenner. Might look nicer with a little accessory, eh? Said Bert.
The elves rolled their eyes, but otherwise ignored the kobolds.
What's wrong, miss? Barked Jenner. We know some good tricks.
The flap on the closest elf's purse opened, and a kobold with long rows of brass earrings poked his head out.
Hey, I got a trick for you,
he growled, and raised a paw in a rude gesture.
That the best you can do? Jenner snarled back. Why not get a real kobold, miss? Your friend has a kobold, miss, Bert hollered to the other elf. Why not get a matching one? Hey, maybe there's a halfling down in Tenderfoot Lane that needs a way to get rid of table scraps,
yipped the purse kobold.
You guys could probably do that.
The elf carrying him clucked her tongue and tapped the kobold on the nose. He gave a placating whine and dove back into her handbag. The elves continued on their way, quietly talking as though the exchange had never happened.
Yeah, all right, keep walking,
Jenner shouted after her. Bert couldn't even muster the enthusiasm for a parting insult. He dropped to sit on the curb.
Did you see those earrings? Are those in now? They did look fantastic,
Jenner conceded.
I can't wear earrings like that.
Bert shook his head and stared at the brick pavers.
What's left of my ear is too floppy. I couldn't afford earrings like that, said Jenner. What am I gonna do?
Asked Bert.
I mean, I can't even keep up with mid-tier fashion, and I'm not getting any younger. Plus, look at my ear. It might never heal right. How am I gonna get back to the upper tiers? Bones, how am I gonna eat?
Jenner sat down next to him.
We'll get by, he said. It will be tough, but you and me, we can... Hey!
The kobolds turned to see that the pair of elves had returned. The woman without a kobold presented her empty purse.
You, in the pink. You want a job or not?
Best of luck, buddy.
Jenner gave Bert a pat on the shoulder before scampering off and jumping into the elf's purse.
Thanks,
muttered Bert. It was hard to bear Jenner too much ill will for abandoning him. Bert would have done the same thing in that position. Bones, he had planned on being in that position. Bert had paired up with the other kobold because he thought he'd look good by comparison. It had been a poor assumption, he reflected as he watched the elves walk off into the gloom. For a while he sat watching the darkness where they had been, letting the weight of the world press in on him.
What am I gonna do?
He wondered aloud, dropping his head into his paws.
Well, hopefully wash that dye out of your fur, for starters. You look ridiculous.
Gorm?
Bert looked up as the dwarf stepped into the torchlight, flanked by the old party.
But what are all of you doing here?
Searching for you, said Caitha.
Which took all day, by the way, said Laruna.
Bert felt a lump in his throat.
You all came back for me?
Course we did,
said Gorm. I wouldn't make Patches wear this otherwise, added Jin. The wizard stepped aside, and behind him Bert could see Patches padding into the torchlight. Thin leather straps traced dark lines across the dog's fur, connected to a small saddle on his back.
We assumed it would be more comfortable, yes? Said Heraldin.
Bert leapt up and threw his arms around Patches' neck. He couldn't have spoken anyway, and burying his face in the dog's fur conveniently hid the tears streaming down the kobold's muzzle.
All right, said Gorm, giving Bert an uncomfortable pat on the shoulder. All right, lad. It's only a saddle.
Yeah.
Bert sniffed as he tried to compose himself.
It just says something, you know?